I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live podcast. This is a segment from last week's live video show. The live show is available every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on Twitch, YouTube, and Twitter. Simply search for BassGod14, that's BASSGOD14, on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. And now, on with the show. I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live. Please pay attention to our warning graphic. It states that the Retro Rogues Live show is intended for an adult audience and not intended for children under the age of 13. Parental discretion is advised. Again, I want to welcome you here to the show. My name is Dave Beatty. I am one of your hosts. For nearly the last 30 years, I've been a professional illustrator and graphic designer, worked on a lot of fun things that some people have heard of, such as Batman Incorporated, Justice League of America, and Superwoman Legion of Superheroes. I already kind of flubbed this up a little bit, so I'm going to go ahead and introduce my co-host, and we'll do the rundown of what we're going to do on tonight's episode. Eric Alexander, please tell the folks, hopefully watching or listening at home, some of the fun things you have worked on as a creative professional.
Yes, hello, everyone. I am Eric Alexander, also known as BassGod14. That's BassGod14, not BassGod14. That's BassGod14, like a bass guitar. And I am the chief financial officer of a small production company called Bad Bob Productions, which is currently involved with filming a film called Staycation, which is going to be gearing up again this month with some shots in California. I did have some house business I wanted to put out there. We are dealing with a sort of delicate situation that I just want people to just be aware of. We can't really talk a lot about it, but there is someone related to the Retro Rogues family, if you will, that is struggling right now. I can't give any more details about it because it's an ongoing situation, but I do want to solicit your good thoughts, good vibes, prayers, because this is a very serious situation and can't really talk more about it. But if I in particular seem a little distracted or anything like that, that's why.
Okay, so this is episode 131. Those of you hopefully watching out there, out in the I don't know what you want to call it, the internet. On tonight's show, we're going to be talking about, as usual, because of Collector's Corner, we're going to be talking about trading cards. We're going to be talking about Loki's first appearance in the trading card. I've also got some interesting picks, too, for some different things that hopefully will spark some lively discussion, hopefully from the Rogues Gallery. We want to encourage you, as we talk about these different topics, as we talk about the pop culture news, the streaming wars, we want to know what you think. So we want you to comment. Comment from wherever you are. You can comment on YouTube, you can comment on Facebook, you can comment on Twitter. It doesn't matter, Twitch, it doesn't matter where you are. We want to encourage you to comment. We want to know what you think about the things we're going to be discussing on tonight's episode.
Well, speaking of comments, Dave, we do have Hollywood Jacks in the house. He's just saying, hi, guys. Hollywood, by the way, I did get the message that you sent me. And if you have some additional stuff that you want to send me, which you had alluded to, please do. Definitely interested. So just want to let you know that I did get what you had sent me initially. And I loved it. Just so you know, I loved it. Jane's also in the house, and she also says, hey, guys.
Hi, Mom. Hi, Hollywood. So here, just at the top here, real quick, if you don't mind, Eric, I'm going to show these off. We talked about these actually on last episode, so I thought I would show everyone my copies, actually, of these first appearances. This is the first appearance of Namor, the Submariner. We talked about this on last episode. And then also, too, everyone had a lot of fun with Iron Fist and his Kung Fu
shoes. Kung Fu-y.
But there you go. There's my copy of the first appearance of Iron Fist on a sticker. Again, these are the Topps 1975 stickers. We're going to be talking about actually another one this evening. Should Very we just cool. go ahead and hit the main topic, Eric? Or
yeah, that sounds good to me. We can get right into
All
it.
Right.
Which cool. one did you want to cover first?
Let's do the Loki first appearance.
Okay. So obviously there's a lot of Loki buzz out there. So
very true. Very true. A lot of excitement for the Loki show on Disney Plus. Those of you hopefully watching, you might find this interesting. This, as far as my research can tell, this is Loki's first appearance on a trading card or anything of that manner. This is actually, again, from 1976. This is a Topps sticker. Again, these don't have any numbering associated with them, but this is Loki's first appearance. What do you think, Eric?
I like it. I actually do like this particular image. And I generally, even though, honestly, I don't know if I've ever even owned a comic book that had Loki in it, But I like the look of the comic book Loki. More so, I think, even than the MCU. And the funny thing is, the MCU is what I know. You know, that's I know Loki more from the MCU than, like I mentioned, from the comic books. And he hasn't had an extensive appearance, you know, in the cartoons. I think you and I were talking about that off the air at one point. And there's only a few cartoons that he's really appeared in. So, and that's generally where my Marvel knowledge comes from, is the cartoons, you know, because I did grow up watching a lot of the cartoons. So it's kind of interesting to me that I kind of prefer this look. And it's also very much in line with the Kenner Marvel Legends line that I promote. You know, we talked about that not too long ago, and that version of Loki, you know, looks like this.
Yeah, and actually the cartoons that Eric's referring to is the old Marvel superheroes cartoons, actually from the 60s, where Loki talked like this, and he was getting, anyhow, it sounds so much like Skeletor, but anyhow, they did those kind of, you know, voices and everything, you know, with the characters. And actually, a lot of times they were animating based off of actually Jack Kirby's original artwork, no less. There was some great Thor cartoons back then. Apparently, they're hard to find. Now, I do have some notes here on my formerly ink-stained fingers, because I used to be an inker. But I am going to tell you right now, the thing that's interesting about this card, if you're interested to pick one up, there are still copies that you can get for basically $1.50 online. So it's not a terribly expensive card if you want to try and pick this one up. Now, slabbed is a different story. We're talking about raw. Raw means just the card, the sticker by its lonesome. So $1.50 and up, depending upon the condition. But slabbed, I saw them for $350 and up.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So that was interesting.
What kind of grade are we talking there?
I think though the three, I think eight and nines were mostly what I was seeing. But yeah, it's a pretty pricey card if it's slabbed and in good condition. Wow. Now a lot of these don't seem to have been kept in necessarily great condition, but still kind of cool. So if you want to play this game, your mission, should you choose to accept it, would be to go to eBay and snag up a couple for $1.50, you know, and whenever the heck we can actually get things graded again, you can turn them in and yeah, maybe you'll come up a winner. Who knows? That's the speculation side of this, if you want to get into that.
Absolutely.
All right, very cool. So again, that's our first card for this evening. Again, Loki's first appearance, 1976 top sticker.
Who says I'm bullheaded?
Exactly.
Or should it be like, who says I'm bullheaded, you know?
There you go. Now you got it. That's exactly the way Loki used to sound the old 60s cartoons. All right, very cool. All right, let's go ahead and go to the next one. That would be my pick, actually. Okay, cool. Thank you. All right, so this is going to be my pick for the card this evening. I picked this one because I love the artwork of Steve Lytle. Steve Lytle is the artist who did the artwork on this card. And the thing that's interesting about this card, too, is that if you notice, we have a really kind of cool face shot. And then below, on the back of the card, I scanned it because I wanted people to see that you actually get kind of like a full body kind of shot. And it's just really interesting the way this card's put together. Now, this is from the 1993 Skybox Marvel Universe. This is card number 49. This is Loki. And what's interesting about this card, too, is that it's part of a series of cards. And if you put them together, all nine cards, like on a sheet, it completes one giant image. This is part of a larger, you know, image, basically. But, you know, looking at all the Loki cards and thinking about them, there's, you know, really great painted Joe Jusco one. There's some really great Hildebrandt ones. There's some really great looking cards. But personally, this is the one I like the best. I feel like it captures his essence the most. I like the fact it's a more comic book based image. I don't always just pick the art images. And the reason I recommend this card is because I just love the artwork of this card. Not a terribly valuable card per se, but I just think it's, in my mind, if you're going to have a Loki card in your collection, you want to have that sticker and you want to have this card. Again, this is the 1993 Skybox, and this one is only a dollar and up. And I did not see a single slabbed graded example anywhere.
Wow. That's interesting, and that's all the way back from 1993. I would kind of think that you would. Do you have any insight onto why that might be? I mean, are the Skybox cards just not that popular, or what?
I think it's just, you know, beyond the 1990 Marvel line and the 91 line, you know, kind of hit or miss. Everything else after that seems to be hit or miss, whether you want to talk about the Jim Lee X-Men, set or whatever else. It's kind of real hit or miss what people are choosing to have. They consider worthy of being graded and slapped, you know, and for whatever reason, a lot of people don't feel that this particular card is worthy of having it to be graded or slapped. I would disagree because I think of all the Loki cards I looked at, I felt like this is the one that, in my mind anyway, artistically speaking, I thought was the best. But again, yeah, that's just my opinion.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I guess sometimes that's just the way the market works, right? It comes down to personal taste, and certain cards seem to really expand in value and others don't. But, you know, we emphasize, you know, on this channel that at least, you know, I try to emphasize that, you know, there really is kind of like three types of collectors out there in my mind, right? There's the people that look at it as an investment, right? Like they want to get like Action Comics number one, and they're going to send their kid to college on that or something like that, right? And that's like the tried and true type stuff too. That's why I'm using the example of like the first appearance of Superman. That's right. Like owning gold. You know what I mean? It really has come into almost that asset class. And then you have, you know, the speculators, you know, where you try to maybe do like a quick flip. It's something that you see as short term. Like we talk about the Marvel bump, you know, Loki can be an example of that, where right now there is the Loki show out there. The previous card you mentioned, slab, can be like $300-$400. That might be a good speculative card to get. And then you have, you know, an example like this where it's just something you really like. It may not really be worth anything, but you just enjoy it, you know. And I think the vast majority of collectors, that is why you collect, right? Ultimately, is because you like it, not because you want to invest it or flip it or anything like that.
Very true. Very true. And then we have Jackie is in the audience. Disappeared. Hi, Jackie.
Hey, it's good to see you. We appreciate you checking out the show. And if you have any comments, please put them out there.
All right. Very cool. So those are my Loki picks. This is going to be kind of more, it's kind of a Marvel side, but if you're enjoying the Loki show, you know, these are the main ones I think would be interesting to kind of take a look at. So if that's good, let's go ahead and go. Let's do the Black Adam one next.
All right. Black Adam.
All right. Very cool. There's a lot of excitement. I know I'm excited anyway for The Rock. It's going to be playing Black Adam and a big budget DC movie over at Warner Brothers. I'm very excited for that. We're going to get a lot of really great DC characters we haven't seen on, like, in the movie anyway. We've never had a movie version of Dr. Fate. We've never had a movie version of Hawkman. We're going to get a lot of these really great characters in the Black Adam movie. And this is the thing that's interesting. I did mention this with the Loki, but I really would have thought there had been a 66 card for Loki, you know, that older Donruss 66 series, and there wasn't one. Huh. And I was stunned to find out that there is a card that predates this one that might be his first appearance, but it's not really like a trading card set per se. It actually goes along with actually a role gaming set. So... Okay. This is where I'm kind of walking into those testy waters where I'm sort of determining that I feel like personally to me, this is his first appearance on a card because that's the card that predates this one. And other than that, apparently there have been no Black Adam cards, which is really shocking to me.
Yeah.
There's not been a lot of Black Adam cards because to me, he's a really important figure in the DC universe. But anyhow, this is my pick. This is what I am going to say is his first appearance, which is why there's a question mark on the graphic. This is my personal opinion, but I would like to say that I consider this to be his first appearance on a trading card because the other one, again, goes with a gaming, role gaming set.
Right.
But this is 1994 Skybox Master Series DC Comics Edition card number 41, Black Adam. What do you think?
You know, it's funny, Dave, because when I was first reviewing the graphics that you had sent me, including the one that we have in the background right now, that was the first time I saw the image and I was looking at it with all the other images, you know, with all the other cards and things like that. And at first I thought it was Captain Marvel Jr. That was my first impression. The color scheme seems a little off to me. It seems a little weird because of the lightning. I feel like they didn't quite get it right. I'm not trying to be overly critical of the artist or anything like that, but that was my first impression was I thought that this was Captain Marvel Jr.
Yeah, it's a little high on the blues and doesn't really come across as black as it probably should.
Right.
But the thing that's really crazy is like I said, this is going to be my pick. This is a nice card. It's a painted card. This is from a really great set, too, that people don't talk about enough. The 1994 Skybox Master Series DC Comics set has got some of the best DC Comics art because it's like the masterpiece, the Marvel masterpiece cards we've been talking about before, the painted cards. This is kind of the same thing, but it's a whole bunch of different artists instead of one particular one. And this is I personally think it's a really cool card. So that's why it's my pick. But then, like I also said, too, it's kind of nebulous. This might be the first appearance, might be the second appearance. Again, I'm kind of getting into those testy waters again. But in my mind, anyway, I'm going to say this is the first appearance.
What's the value we're looking at for something like this?
Okay, so this one is another one that's really inexpensive. You're looking at $1 and up.
That's really? It.
Yeah, you get it with a set of other cards. You're going to pay probably less than $1. The 1994 Skybox series is not very highly valued among kind of more of the, I guess I'm not going to say the collectors. I think the collectors appreciate it, but maybe the card investors don't necessarily appreciate it.
This is one that you don't see graded very often or at all.
No. Okay. But the thing that's weird about it, like I said, this is either his first appearance or his second appearance. So this is an early card for Black Adam because they just didn't make a lot of them, which I found curious and interesting. And then I do have a companion card that goes with this. If we could put the Captain Marvel Shazam card up. All right. I talked about this card last show. I'm not going to spend too much time on it. This 1994 Skybox Master Series. Again, this is Shazam. This is the original Captain Marvel. This is actually my pick. This is a really awesome painted card, in my opinion, by the great artist Steve Rude. Steve the Dude Rude. I think this is a really, really cool looking card, and I just think it's awesome. So we're recommending this because I just think it's awesome, and I think it's a good companion piece to go with the other one. What do you think about this pick?
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I love Steve's artwork. You know, I did get to interact with him quite a bit, you know, back in the day at Phoenix Comic Con, and I was even doing some other things at the time, and he was supporting them. I was trying to do the Arizona Comic Book Association, and he was actually supportive of that endeavor. There's nothing bad I'm ever going to say about the guy, you know what I mean? Especially his work. I mean, his work just stands out. It speaks for itself. He does great stuff, and when I think of Captain Marvel, you know, the Shazam Captain Marvel, this is the kind of image I think of. You know what I mean? This is exactly the kind of thing I want to see him doing. So can't say enough good things.
Well, there you go. So that's those are kind of my main picks for this evening. And then I do have a couple of wild cards.
Did you have any quotes on the value of this particular card?
This is another one. Yeah, this one is not very expensive, $1 and up. And again, you buy it in a set of other cards, you can get it for less than $1. I think it's worth more than $1. And again, I didn't see any graded slabbed examples. So whenever I get around to doing that, I will probably be one of the few people that have them. Let me put it that way. I didn't see any for sale. Let me put it that way. There might be some out there, but I didn't see any for sale.
Well, you know, in terms of speculation, I would put out there that when the Black Adam movie comes out, you never know. You might see a bump on that previous card that we were talking about. So that's something to consider. Jane is also mentioning that she got to meet Steve Rude as well. And he's a really nice guy. He is. He's a very nice guy, Jane. Great guy.
All right. Very cool. Let's go ahead and go on the last two here because I don't want to spend too much time on the cards. And I've got quite a bit this evening.
So, Batman first appearance?
Yes.
Batman let's do Barbara that. First appearance?
Okay. Now, this one, you're going to be like, first appearance? What? Okay, let me explain. Let's say hi. This is the first appearance of Val Kilmer as Batman on a trading card. Okay, before anybody freaks out and goes, that's not his first. But this is the first appearance of Val Kilmer as Batman.
Wait a second. You're saying this isn't the first appearance of Batman on a trading card?
No. This is the first appearance of Val Kilmer as Batman on a trading card. All right. So this is 1995 Fleer Ultra Batman Forever. This is actually card, ready for it, A1. Like A1. Is that a steak sauce? No, it's this card. Let me explain what makes this the first appearance. If you'll pay attention to my screen here. you'll see that what I'm holding up is actually the back of this card. This is a promo card, everybody. This is the front. Okay, the image that we see there. This is actually a promotional card. So I think technically this would be the first appearance of Val Kilmer on a trading card as Batman. And the reason I wanted to pick this is because there's been a lot of excitement, a lot of talk about the release of the Joel Schumacher cut or release the Schumacher cut. I forget what the hashtag is. A lot of excitement yesterday where people were talking about Batman Forever because Batman Forever actually celebrated an anniversary. And I thought that was really kind of cool. So I wanted to talk about Batman Forever. I talked about how much I love the movie. But this is your first appearance, again, of Batman, but Val Kilmer Batman on a trading card. But this one might be a little tough to get. But what do you think about this card, Eric?
I like it. You know, I've always kind of liked the movie cards. You know, I never had a lot of them. I had some Star Wars ones, and I think I inherited a few from my brother's collection of like Empire Strikes Back cards at one point. I've always liked them. I've never had a whole lot of them. I've mentioned previously on the show, I do have some Star Trek cards. I believe they're like the 25th anniversary Impel. I have to recheck that. I keep saying that too, and I don't recheck. Those cards are at my mom's. That's one of the reasons that I don't just readily, you know, have access to them, that I can't just grab it somewhere in the house here. I've always liked that kind of stuff. I've always liked, you know, like, you know, the photo covers, you know, for variants of different like movie tie-ins. I've always enjoyed that. So I like that kind of stuff.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, this one, I couldn't find a lot of instances where people were selling it necessarily on eBay or anything. If they are, this would be probably a card that'd be relatively inexpensive. I wouldn't expect more to pay more than a couple dollars for it if you can find it. The trick's going to be finding it, though. There might be some out there that maybe I missed because of how the search parameters are set up. But if you're a Batman fan, if you love Batman Forever, this is kind of neat. Like I said, this appears to be your first appearance of Val Kilmer as Batman on a trading card. But I also have a pick. If we could do the pick next. There you go. All right. So this is actually my pick for this evening. I love this image. I've always loved this image. This is actually, again, the 1995 Fleer Ultra Batman Forever. But this is card number one, everybody. Check that out. This is card number one. Again, this is Val Kilmer as Batman. This is my pick for this evening. And again, just because of all the excitement about Batman Forever, this is another card you can get relatively inexpensively, dollar or less. You buy it with a set of the other Batman Forever cards, you're going to pay a lot less than a dollar. I did not see any examples of this graded or slabbed necessarily for sale, but there will be. You will eventually be seeing one on this show because this card has been set aside to be graded and slabbed actually by me. So eventually you'll get a chance to see one. But I just have always loved this card. I just feel like it's a really cool image. What do you think about this pick?
Yeah, it's a classic image from the film. There's no doubt about it. I mean, this is, I think, almost directly from like the movie poster, right? A classic image. It's a great version of the Val Kilmer Batman, or for that matter, any live action Batman. This is just a great, great image. Did you have any insight into value on this one?
Again, like I said, this one's going to be really, really inexpensive. You're looking at a dollar less. Again, you buy it in a set of cards, you're going to pay a lot less than a dollar. The Batman Forever stuff on the collectible side, sometimes it could be a little pricey, but normally it's relatively inexpensive because there's a segment of the fandom that doesn't really like Batman Forever, and you have another segment of the fandom, like me, I'm a part of that fandom, that loves this movie. And I saw a really interesting, we can't show it on the show because we get in all kinds of trouble, but Batman Online actually posted a really amazing clip between Michael Goff, who played Alfred and Val Kilmer as Bruce Wayne, Batman, they're in the Batcave. Really, really awesome scene and different setup. The dialogue that was in the original, the movie we saw in theaters, but slightly different. Really interesting and a lot more darker kind of take on Batman. And I'd love to see that Schumacher cut if it technically exists. I think it'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, there has been a lot of buzz on that, and that's definitely something I would like to see as well. In some ways, it feels like almost a little bit of a no-brainer. You would think that HBO Max would be interested in that, but there's a lot of upheaval going on with that company, so I guess we'll just have to see.
Very true, very true. All right, well, let's get going. What do you have for tonight's Collector's Corner, Eric?
Well, my contribution to Collector's Corner is actually more in line with pop culture. So I'm going to go ahead and just change the background here because I didn't do any. Whoops, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do it that way. I meant to do it as the background. There we go. So I didn't have any. Usually I like to show pickups. Like if I bought something or if there's a, you know, a line that I'm supporting, I've been pushing the Marvel Legends line quite a bit, the Kenner Marvel Legends to be specific. And I've been collecting it. I basically, I think, have all of Wave 1 and Wave 2 at this point. And I'm trying to keep my eyes peeled for Wave 3, which a lot of people are saying has been available at stores, particularly at Target. And I'm also hearing possibly GameStop. So I do want to make some trips to those places and see if I might be able to acquire some of those Wave 3 Marvel Legends figures. But since I haven't made any recent acquisitions, I came across this news story, and I thought that it would be fun to share with the folks out there that I think might be interested in this stuff. So I want to give credit where credit is due. Initially, I heard about this actually from the Retro Blasting Twitter account. He was talking about this and he had some images. So if you're familiar with Retro Blasting, he does have a Twitter account. And I think he had some additional images besides this one. And then I was able to find this article, which is from the HDR Room. So this is the HDRroom.com. This is not a site that I'm that familiar with, but the headline reads Playmobil. You can hear what's on my mind, I guess. Playmobil Star Trek Enterprise NCC-1701 playset is massive, and the pre-order is live. And this is just dated yesterday. This is something that just happened. You can see the image here of the Enterprise. This is obviously Playmobil version. It's apparently a massive set. You can see that the saucer section basically is the bridge. So you have a bridge playset. And then they also have a little engine room there for Scotty. So Scotty can be sitting there all alone in the engine room, which I think is kind of cool. I like that. So the article says Playmobil has been slowly venturing into more licensed properties as their primary competitor, Lego, has been cranking them out for the past decade plus. Their next, Star Trek, will yield one of, if not the biggest, Playmobil playsets ever produced and go boldly where their toy company has never gone before. Says this is even bigger than the Ghostbusters headquarters. Some of you may have been familiar that they did do a license for Ghostbusters. In fact, I did buy a couple Ghostbuster toys for my kids. So they're around here somewhere. But it says this thing is going to be 42 inches long and 18 inches wide. It is going to retail at $499.99, so $500, Dave.
Wow,
$500 for this thing, but it is a beast. You know, 42 yeah. inches long, 18 inches wide. It will come with Dr. Leonard Bones McCoy, Ensign Chekov, Lieutenant Uhura, Captain James T. Kirk, Mr. Spock, Lieutenant Sulu, and of course, as I mentioned, the Chief Engineer Montgomery Scott. And I like his little spot there where you can be alone on the engine room. I just think that's kind of funny. So the official release from Playmobil says, where's Captain Kirk? Why, he's on the bridge of the Playmobil 70548 Star Trek USS Enterprise NCC-1701 playset. Quite possibly the biggest and most deluxe Playmobil set created up to this point, this 42-inch long, 18-inch wide starship includes electronic lights and sounds that can be controlled by your smart device. It includes a display cradle, plus wire for ceiling suspension, if that's your preferred means of display. The set includes a marvelous ship modeled after its appearance on the original series, plus figures and accessories. And it does mention that there are other complementary Playmobil sets to the Enterprise that are coming as well. And I'd probably be more interested in those other sets that are coming out. Like, I'm hoping they'll have, like, you know, the figures themselves, that you can just get the figures. And I do think that this does seem like it's very much equivalent to the Ghostbusters headquarters. And if you know anything about the Ghostbusters line, for Playmobil, they did come out with a lot of like small little booster packs and things like that. So I am hoping that's going to happen with this line.
You know, what would be cool is if they did like a Galileo 7, you know,
yeah,
kind of thing. That would be cool. Neat.
Yeah, and, shuttle. And then, that would work. That'd be cool.
Yeah. And it'd be cool if they did like Kirk versus the Gorn. So get a little Gorn Playmobil, you know?
That would be pretty cool.
Those would be pretty cool. I'd be down for that. So this is a little bit too expensive for me.
Yeah, this is definitely a premium collectible. There's no doubt about it. But if you're really into Star Trek, this would be a very cool thing to have in your house. And I do like the fact that they actually, you know, give you like wire and stuff. So for people that do want to like put it on their ceiling, I think that would be a great way to display this. I think that would be a really great way to display this.
Very cool. Very cool. I like the fact that you're, you got something super mega retro. Cause I had actually something for pop culture too. That's also super mega retro. That's really cool. I mean, I like it. It's just, like I said, just when you start talking about the display requirements, you know, in terms of the size and then the cost, it's just a little bit much for me. I'm kind of more in this vein. This is my Starship Reliant here.
There you go.
This was actually a gift and actually painted by Lynn Workman. This actually sits here actually on my desk in a place of honor. That's kind of more my speed, I think. So,
well, again, if you are familiar with the Ghostbusters line that Playmobil did, they did have a lot of small sets. In fact, I think like they had one that I was like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. I think that's the one I actually bought for my kids, you know, and like two of the Ghostbusters. And then they did another one that had the like the Gozer, you know, like the Gozer dogs, you know what I mean? So from the first movie. So they did do like these separate, much smaller sets. And I am hoping the same thing is going to happen with the Star Trek line. But Hollywood brings up the point, does it come with Picard? And no, it doesn't, Hollywood. It does not come with Picard.
It's funny.
I almost wanted to talk about it, but I knew I was just going to be really angry. But I came across an article where the headline was like, you know, basically, you know, why TNG has such a better legacy than the original Star Trek, you know? And then I see stuff like this. Okay, it's not a next gen set. And I love, you know, I like next gen, but I do think Picard kind of tainted it. There's no doubt about it. It's tainted the legacy of TNG, you know, the next generation in my mind. And it's you know, it's funny to me. No, this is not a next generation playset. They're still making original series stuff, and the legacy of the original series will never be matched by any other Star Trek. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is, folks. just the way it is.
Like I said, if they did a Galileo 7 shuttle, you know, and it wasn't like $500 and they did a little, you know, Kirk versus Gorn, that's kind of more my speed. I'd totally be down for that.
Jane says yesterday was Picard Day. Is that why they came out with the trailer? Did you see that, by the way? They came out with the Picard season 2 trailer with Q and everything. Did you see that?
Yeah, that is why they did release the trailers, because yesterday was Picard Day. But the reason on tonight's show we're talking about Batman Forever is because Batman Forever is also trending, because it was the Batman Forever anniversary. And I'd rather talk about the thing I like than the thing that I don't really care for. Sorry, Mom. I really like Picard. I'm sorry.
Well, Hollywood says he knows that you're disappointed, Dave, that there was no Picard figure in that Enterprise set that I was talking about. So.
I am not disappointed at all. I'm glad there's no Picard figure with that. You know, I think Robert Meyer Burnett has a show, Robservations. I don't know if you've seen it before, Eric, but Robservations, one of his most recent episodes, he summed it up by saying, he said the season 2 of Picard, boldly going where we've gone before. And I feel like that just kind of sums it up right there. Boldly going where we've gone before. And if you haven't checked out Robservations, check out Robert Meyer Burnett's show, Robservations. It's really great. You can find it on YouTube. Great, great show. Free plug. I don't think Robert Meyer Burnett would be promoting us, but hey, I'll plug his show because I quite like his show.
Hey, I was talking about retroblastings earlier. So we get all sorts of love on this show. Nobody gives us love, but we try to give love to everybody else, and credit where credit is due. But it is what it is, right?
There you go. All right. So let me talk about my pop culture real quick, if that's okay. Let me share my screen here. Oh, see, that's the problem. We're both trying. You're trying to help me out, and I'm trying to do it.
Exactly.
All right, so This is over on Entertainment Earth. I thought this was really cool. I got an email about this. This is Universal Studios Monsters, Frightening Fun from Universal Classic Monsters. So they're releasing these classic versions of the Universal Studios Monsters. I thought these were really neat. They're about $25 each. We've got, you know, the Creature from the Black Lagoon. We've got Dracula. And we've got Frankenstein. And I thought these were really kind of neat. I love the classic Universal Studios monsters, but I just thought they looked really cool. We'll zoom in here on Frankenstein if we can. I thought that was pretty neat, you know, $25, give or take, over on Entertainment Earth. We talked about Entertainment Earth before. They should be a sponsor on this show as much as we talk about Entertainment Earth. But I thought this was pretty cool. What do you think, Eric?
Yeah, I like it. I think a lot of your adult collectors will like this. I've mentioned myself personally, I am not a big fan of like what I call over articulation. And I do like this as kind of an example of that. Because I like my figures to be a little bit more solid. But, you know, obviously, I think that's not the trend for adult collectors these days. Most adult collectors, they want massive articulation. I know that, I think it was your brother, right, that has those dioramas where he'll do these very, you know, intricate, you know, scenes and things like that with his figures and stuff like that. So I get that. I definitely get that. And I think that is cool.
All right. Well, there you go. This is my entry into the action figure realm. If you're interested, if you love the Universal Studios Monsters, check them out. They're available for pre-order over on Entertainment Earth. And again, this is not a paid plug. We're talking about it because we like Entertainment Earth as a company. And I thought this was kind of a neat, cool kind of action figure line.
Yeah, it is very cool. I like the Universal Monsters quite a bit, you know, so I think that you can't really go wrong with that kind of stuff, especially the classic look. So that stuff is always going to be classic. It's always going to be something I think that people enjoy. So definitely a good pick and a lot cheaper than mine.
Yeah, that's true.
A lot less expensive than what I was showing people. So
all right, very cool. So what do you have anything else for pop culture this evening, Eric?
Yeah, I think this actually does fit most accurately into pop culture. We haven't talked about the box office in quite a while, and I have a sort of personal story. The box office is back. Just yesterday, a friend of mine invited me to actually go to a movie theater and watch a movie, you know, so which I hadn't done in quite a while. I did watch The Croods in the theater, so I wasn't completely out of the theater during the entire pandemic. Like, we did go see The Croods in the theater with my kids. But, you know, now I feel like the movie theaters are really coming back. They're really opening up. And this is the box office report from this last weekend. And I thought it was very interesting. Number one is A Quiet Place Part Two. And the weekend gross was $12 million, but it's made over $100 million. It's made $109 million so far. And I believe this is a domestic only. I don't believe that this is the international. I could be mistaken, but I do believe that they only do domestic on because it's top U.S. box office. So I don't think they incorporate the international box office. And I did want to point out all the way down at, look, it looks like number five is Cruella. And Cruella only made $6.7 million this last weekend and only has made a total of $56 million, at least domestically. I bring that up because I, of course, am very angry with Disney's business model of putting films in the theater and then also having them on Disney Plus, and then you have to pay for it. So you have to pay like $30 or whatever it is for Cruella. I hate that. I absolutely hate that model. So I'm so glad to see Cruella is not doing as well as these other movies, in particular, A Quiet Place Part Two, which it's my understanding, Dave, that you have seen that film.
I have seen A Quiet Place Part Two. Micah, my wife and I, we both went and saw that. It was opening weekend. We actually went with some friends, actually went back out to the movie theater. First time I'd been in a movie theater in over a year. They had a kind of, it was kind of neat. They had a message from John Krasinski. I don't know if they had it for yours, but the message mm-hmm. from him where he came out and thanked people for coming out to the theaters and supporting the film. And I thought that was really neat. I really enjoyed the first A Quiet Place, and I actually quite enjoyed the sequel. It ends on one of those things where they got to do another one, though. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's one of those definitely big cliffhanger kind of moments. But I quite enjoyed it, and I like the fact that they expanded upon the story more. They gave us a little bit more about kind of how things, you know, started, potentially what, you know, triggered the events. What did you think about it?
Yeah, interestingly enough, the friend that I went to the film with, he said that the trailer that he saw had actually made him think that this was a prequel film. And there is a flashback scene, and I guess the trailer that he had seen only showed parts from that flashback. So he actually thought we were going to be watching essentially a prequel. So I'm curious if there might be other people out there that you had that assumption as well, or might even still have that assumption if you haven't seen the film yet. It's not. I just wanted to point that out there because my friend did bring that up. But there is a flashback, and as Dave mentioned, it does give you a lot more background into this phenomenon, you know, of where these basically these monsters are coming from. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I really think it's interesting, and there are other commentators have talked about this. What's really nice about this is that this is like a new franchise. So much of what we talk about, honestly, are basically reboots, remakes, you know, that kind of a thing. And it's kind of the same thing over and over again. You know, even Loki, even though it's kind of, you know, it's like its own show or whatever, Loki's been around a long time. Okay. And I know a lot of people love Loki. I'm not trying to rag on you if you like Loki. I understand it. I like Loki too. I'm not supporting the series, but I do like Loki. I do like the character and the MCU version of Loki. But it is nice to see Hollywood doing actual new stuff. Now, are there some tropes in this? There's two big ones. I don't want to spoil anything, but there's two big ones that did grab me in this movie. And I'm talking about those classic like horror movie tropes that they seem to use over and over and over again. There were at least two in this one that I kind of almost cringed. But it didn't take away my enjoyment of the film. And I do want to emphasize that I really like the fact that this is a new franchise. I see loads of potential in the next one. I'm actually kind of wondering what route they're going to go, because in my mind, they could take it in a completely different direction if they wanted to. But then again, would they lose the core of the movie if they did what I'm thinking? And I'm not trying to put any spoilers out there, but I do think it's really awesome that this is a new franchise, and it does seem to have a ton of potential and a ton of lore. What do you think, Dave?
No, I totally agree. I, like I said, I really enjoyed the first one, and I quite enjoyed the sequel. And I liked, you know, what they showed us. I mean, I like I said, I'm definitely curious to see another one, because I do want to see where the story goes. And at the end of the day, you know, that's hopefully the hallmark of a good film. You want to see where it goes, you know, if it were to continue. I feel like this one's definitely more open-ended that it needs to continue more than necessarily the first one. Like the first one ends and you want to see more, but it felt like more of an ending. This one definitely leaves you at a point where you're like, okay, well, they have to do another one.
Right.
So I think
it's definitely a franchise at this point. Right.
Yeah.
So I think it's very clear that they want to do more. And it seems to me that they want to expand it, you know, because, you know, the story is very much centered essentially on one family. Right. That's not really giving a spoiler to anyone. But I think what this movie sets up is the potential of finding out what's really going on in a larger world. That's what I think this opens the door to, and therefore could make this like a real contender, you know what I mean, as far as franchises go, you know, where it could be, you know, something that could really compete with something like Star Wars or you know, even the MCU.
Right. So, yeah. But no, it sounds like we're both kind of like a positive recommendation if you've been thinking about going out and checking out A Quiet Place too. Sounds like Eric and I are both on the same page, and we think it's a worthwhile film to go see in the theaters.
And don't pay for Cruella. Don't do it. Don't do it. And I haven't seen the movie, and I won't. And that's, again, it has nothing to do with who's in it or whether it's good or bad. It's that crappy business decision by Disney. Don't support that kind of stuff, because if you do, they're going to keep doing it. And you're going to have to pay extra money when you're already paying for Disney Plus. You know, folks, you got to vote with your dollars.
Right, right. And along those lines, Mike and I discussed it. And when Black Widow comes out, we're going to go see Black Widow in the theater. So, oh, okay. Because we want to see it. I've been looking forward to it for a very, very long time. But we were talking about it and we were discussing, it's like, do we want to do this premium access thing? And I'm like, I don't want to do that. She's like, I don't want to either. And I was like, well, we'll just go watch it in the theater. Why not? You know? So yeah. That's how we're going to go see Black Widow. We're going to go see it in the theater.
Yeah. I haven't decided yet whether that's my plan or not, because I do know they did make an announcement that eventually Black Widow will come onto, I guess, Disney Plus proper, if you're going to call it that, because there's the premium, right? They've created this weird tier. Again, I don't even understand the marketing of it, right? I don't even know what to call it. You know, when you have to pay this extra charge, I guess it's Disney Plus Premium is what they call it, something like that. Again, I don't want to support that, but it is my understanding that Black Widow is going to be coming out on the regular Disney Plus as part of the subscription service, I think in October. So I would have to wait quite a long time after the film is out if I did that route. So I may end up having to go see it in the theater as well.
Yeah, I think that's, like I said, that's what my wife and I are going to do. And we enjoyed it. It was fun getting back out. Like I said, it had been over a year since we've been out to the theater. So it was fun going out. We had dinner, met some friends, and saw the movie, and it was a lot of fun. All right, very
right
cool.
On, right on.
All right, so
the box office is back, folks.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny, too, because, you know, those are good numbers, you know, post-pandemic, but before, man, people would not be talking about a sequel with those kind of numbers. You know what I mean? It'd be the complete opposite. It's like, well, this thing didn't do well. So it's interesting to see how a change of perspective suddenly makes you realize, like, oh, that's pretty good, actually. You know, so there
you go. Well, I think that's good even pre-pandemic. Anything over 100 million is always a good, solid number, you know, so.
Right, but I just remember, it's like usually when a film puts up those numbers, people start talking doom and gloom, you know, and it's that's not always the case, you know. It depends upon the budget, it depends upon what they're expecting, how well they're expecting the film to perform. And I would definitely love to see another one. Like I said, it's definitely open for another sequel to The Quiet Place. All right, very cool. Do you have anything else for pop culture this evening?
Nope. That's all I got.
Okay. All right. What about Streaming Wars? Do you have anything for Streaming Wars?
I didn't have anything for Streaming Wars. I did see a comment that was interesting on one of our previous installments. And it's one of those things that I want to do a little bit more research on. But it's about the whole rating system. And there was someone in the comments that was criticizing the way Samba basically rates streaming shows. We were talking about Loki, actually, and whether Loki's numbers are really that good. So please check that out if you haven't, to put some more context for the conversation, because I am going to look into this a little bit more. And my hot take, my response to this comment was that I do kind of feel like the Nielsens do it better because they do viewing hours, whereas Samba, basically, they kind of do it almost like the way YouTube gives you a view. So like if it's over like 2 minutes or 3 minutes or something like that, they just give it a view. So they go by views, and the Nielsens go by actual viewing hours. And I do think the Nielsens does it better. I do think that the Nielsens does it right. The problem is Samba will come out with their ratings like the day after, and Nielsens comes out with their ratings a month after. That's the big problem. So that's one of the things, you know, in our Streaming Wars coverage, I've been craving that data. And I was really excited when the Nielsens started doing ratings. And now we've had a couple different episodes where we've talked about the Samba TV ratings, but they're very different animals. You know what I mean? Their whole process of how they go about rating these shows is radically, radically different. Because we won't know what Loki's actual like Nielsen ratings are in those actual hours, again, for probably like another month, you know what I mean? At least like 3 weeks, because the Nielsen seem to always be way behind. But it is something that I want to do some additional research on. And I appreciate that comment that came out regarding that previous episode where we were talking about Loki's ratings.
That's interesting too, because by the time those Nielsen numbers will be out, Loki will have pretty much almost about run its course.
Right.
Exactly. As well. So, yeah. Interesting. Yeah,
it is something I wish they could work on. And I, as far as I know, the regular television ratings come out much more quickly. So I don't know exactly why that is, why they have such a delay. And then, of course, the other thing is with the Nielsens, they generally don't rate anything besides it's basically Amazon, Netflix, Disney Plus, and I believe that there's one other one, but it's not HBO Max. You know, there's like one other streaming service, and they actually had to go back. We reported on this a while ago when Wonder Woman came out. Wonder Woman was the top streamer of that particular rating period, and they actually went back and they actually did incorporate Wonder Woman into the ratings, but it was like just a one-shot deal. And as far as I know, they still have not incorporated HBO Max into their rating system. So basically they only have Hulu's the other one, I believe. Yeah. So those are the four platforms that the Nielsen rates consistently. But then they'll have, like I said, they'll have like a weird one shot where they decide to do HBO Max. So it would also be good if the Nielsens were more comprehensive in terms of all of these different streaming platforms, you know, to include Peacock. I would love to know what Peacock's doing with The Office, because we used to talk about, you know, the Nielsen ratings and the fact that The Office was like always in the top 10, consistently in the top 10. In fact, the Nielsens even kind of like did subdivisions because they kind of wanted, obviously, to have like, they didn't want that legacy content having to compete with the new content, because we were pointing that out because it was black and white. But we were like, man, The Office is still like number 5, you know what I mean? And The Mandalorian's like number 6, you know, it's kind of funny, you know, the way that like that would work. And I think the studios didn't like those optics, you know what I mean? So now like you go to the Nielsen's and there's a different tab and you actually have to like, you know, check, you know, oh, new stuff, you know what I mean? Legacy stuff, you know, and then, you know, they're rated separately, which I think is really interesting. But I would love to know what The Office is doing on Peacock, but I just don't have access to those numbers.
Interesting, interesting. Very cool. All right. Well, I don't have anything for Streaming Wars, unfortunately, this episode. I knew we were going to run probably a little long because I had so many trading card picks I wanted to talk about this evening. Those of you who might be joining us now, might be coming in maybe a little bit late, you know, check out the replay on YouTube once we finish the live broadcast. You'll be able to go over there and actually see the episode in its entirety. Also, I want to encourage people to check out also actually the audio version of the show, too. You can check it out on Spotify, Anchor, all the places you like your favorite podcast. Check out Retro Rogues Live. Search for Retro Rogues Live. There'll be an audio version of the show, again, recapping everything. So you definitely check out that as well. All right.
Jane had a comment on the Nielsen ratings, and she said, the reason for the delay is a person actually watches the shows and keeps daily records. These are turned in monthly if it is still done like when I got to do them. Jane, I do have a little insight in this because I actually was solicited by the Nielsens at one point, and then I know somebody else who actually did it. In fact, I believe she was even on our show. I think Heather, actually, who was a guest host on our show a while back when we were doing a prelude to Picard, I believe she actually did the Nielsen ratings, if I'm not mistaken. I can't confirm that, but I believe that she did. And it's a much more digital process as I understand it now. So like basically it's like you hook something up to your television, you know what I mean? And then it's like all automatic now. So it's not like daily logs and stuff like that. That's my understanding based on what she told me.
Interesting. Interesting. I've never been solicited to do Nielsen. So I think the closest thing I've done is my wife and I, because we were big movie buffs, we would go like on the weekends. We used to love to make a day of it on Saturday if we didn't have a lot of things going on. So we would go see one movie and then get out and then go see a different movie, like on the same day, see two movies. And we used to love to do that because we were just such big movie buffs. And there was one time we were coming out of one movie, going into the next one, and there actually happened to be people with the surveys, you know, for like test screening movies, right? And they noticed that we were getting out of one movie and going right back into another one. And so we came out of that when they stopped us, and they're like, "Do you guys just see two movies today?" And I was like, "Yeah, we love movies. It's like what we do." And they're like, "Hey, you know, would you be interested in watching new movies, you know, before they're actually finished, because we want to survey audiences and get the reaction?" And I was like, "Sure, why not? That sounds like fun." And my wife was down to do it. And so we did that for a period of time. We would go We would be those priests, those screening audiences that everyone hated, who would give the feedback to the movie theaters, and they'd go back and retool and reshoot things because the jokes didn't land or whatever. We used to do that for a brief period of time back in the 90s. So,
yeah, I went to one of those for The Postman, of all things. I don't know if you remember that movie with
Kevin Costner film. Yeah.
The book is so much better than the movie. I can't say enough good things about the book. The movie is kind of like, especially when you compare it to the book. I mean, that book is amazing. And a lot of people, I don't think, realize that was a book, The Postman. Check it out. But I did go to one of those type of screenings for that, where they actually did have several scenes that, you know, were, I guess, didn't play well or whatever, because we had little comment cards. And when I went and saw it in the theater when it came out, just to see the difference, and there was a difference. There were whole scenes and things like that that they took out. There was like a whole kind of like setup sequence that they completely removed, which I actually thought kind of made the movie look confusing, because if you had known what had happened, you know, if you had seen it, if you'd seen what had happened as it was in the original version, it kind of explained what the relationship of these characters was a little bit better. But those are kind of fun, because you get to see a version of the movie that basically no one else is going to see.
Yeah, I remember one of the movies that we saw the biggest difference in was actually a David Spade movie, of all things. And I don't remember the name of the movie now, but there was this bit with a dog that we thought was funny. And so we rated that particular like scene like really highly, like as being the high point of the film. And then I saw the film much, much later, like on television, and they actually expanded the scene and actually added more to it. So it was even crazier than it was.
Was it Joe Dirt?
We saw it. No, it wasn't Joe Dirt. It was some kind of a romantic comedy kind of thing with David Spade and involved a dog. I don't remember what the name of that movie was anymore.
The dog's very prominent in Joe Dirt. And that's probably my favorite David Spade movie is Joe Dirt. I really like that movie.
It wasn't Joe Dirt. I can tell you that it was something else. But I don't remember what it was. It did not make much of an impression. I just remember later on seeing it and like going, they've added to that dog scene. Like they even made it more. Like how do you even do that? So
there you go.
But yeah, there you go. Interesting.
Very cool.
All right. Well, unless anyone in the Rogues Gallery has anything else that they want to talk about, I think this is going to do it. We don't know what we're going to do for Sunday, but we want to encourage you. Please check out our Sunday show. We do two shows a week now, so we'll be doing another one on Sunday, hopefully. Usually it's about 12:15. It's kind of an afternoon matinee kind of deal. Usually we'll watch something that's a retro Rogues retrospective. So it's an older film that we do a retrospective on. I don't think we haven't picked one yet, have we?
We're going to do the Soviet Lord of the Rings.
Oh, that's right. I totally forgot about that. Yeah, there's so much going on. Okay, so there. Tell them what it is, Eric, because this is crazy what we're going to do for the Sunday matinee.
Well, apparently in the last days of the Soviet Union, so literally this is like 1991, right? Okay. So literally the Soviet Union is crumbling, and they apparently decided to make their own version of the Fellowship of the Rings. It kind of reminds me of what happened with that Lord of the Rings animated film that they basically never finished. It covers basically the Fellowship of the Rings, and it gets a little bit into the Two Towers. But they never finished it. In fact, they ended up actually doing the Return of the King with a completely different studio, the same one that did The Hobbit. I have all of those, by the way. I have all three of those animated Lord of the Rings films. So we're gonna check this thing out. It might be basically like a fever dream. That's kind of what I'm kind of hearing from people as far as what this film is. We don't know how to pronounce it. You know, David, I still don't know how to pronounce the name of this film. So I'll just call it the Soviet, you know, Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. So yeah, it's called Kana. So, yeah, it's 1991, made for TV. Again, Soviet production, for basically Lord of the Rings. And it's called Karanateli. Anyhow, this is what we're going to be doing on Sunday, Karanateli. But you can watch it. I think we found it on YouTube. So we're just going to watch it on YouTube. So if you want to search it out, it's Karanateli. I joked I was going to put together like actually a Russian accent. I've been so busy. It's not funny. Karanatelli. So we'll be doing that on Sunday again, 12:15. You can find it on YouTube. You just search for Soviet Lord of the Rings. It'll come up. It's a Karanatelli. Not sure how to spell
it. I was just doing that myself. And it's just put in Soviet Lord of the Rings and it pops right up. And then you'll know what we're talking about. Again, I've heard that this is kind of like almost like a fever dream or something like that. But hey, we want to check it out. We think it'll be something kind of interesting. And there is some Lord of the Rings buzz going on right now. Obviously Amazon is going to be doing a Lord of the Rings series. You know, I believe it's supposed to be like a prequel where it's, you know, before the events of the three Lord of the Rings books. I think even before The Hobbit actually too, is when that series takes place. But we thought it might be fun, something different. Stone is in the house and he says, "Hi guys, I've never been in a test audience like that, but I did get to see an early screening of Batman Mask of the Phantasm." James, we've actually reviewed Batman Mask of the Phantasm. If you haven't checked it out, you definitely should.
Yeah, I still hold out as probably one of the, if not maybe the best Batman movie ever made, actually. Because it's just so well structured and so well put together. It's really, really good. Very cool. Very cool. All right. So again, search for that on YouTube. The Soviet Lord of the Rings. It's spelled with a K. It's Karanatelli or something. We're going to be talking about that on our Rogues retrospective on Sunday, again at 12:15. So we hope that you will join us for that. All right. Very cool. All right. I think that's it then, unless you have anything else, Eric.
No, that's pretty much all I've got.
All right, very cool. All right, so we want to thank you for hopefully watching or listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live. I want to encourage you, if you have family, friends, anyone you think might enjoy the show, please tell them about the Retro Rogues Live. We'd definitely like for them to be part of the Rogues Gallery and come on the show and comment. At least you see we like to put up people's comments, and we want to know what you think. We want you to be part of our discussions that we have here on the show. With that, I'm just going to tell you, if you're interested to see some of the things that I currently work on, you can check that out over at kirbytees.com. That's KIRBYTS.com, as well as possibly you can check out, we got some Retro Rogues live t-shirts, as well as one actually with artwork contributed by Mr. James Stone, who is here in the Rogues Gallery this evening. I want to thank James for the contributing artwork that's available on a t-shirt. You can check that out over there at kirbytees.com. Maybe consider purchasing a Retro Rogues live t-shirt and supporting what we're doing on the show. We would greatly appreciate your support. But enough about that. I want to thank my great co-host, Mr. Eric Alexander, for being here on the show, providing his unique perspective. As always, Eric, please tell the folks who are watching or listening at home where they can learn more about you on the interwebs.
I'm most active on Twitter. They can reach me there at BassGod14. That's at BASSGOD14. That's also the official YouTube. That's also the official Twitch. So if you make comments there, more likely than not, the response you get is going to be from me. That's also a great way to interact. If you have any comments, suggestions, just like I was talking about earlier, you know, somebody was bringing up the issues with the Zombie TV ratings. I'm more than happy to look into that stuff and address that stuff on the show as well. But if you do have any suggestions, whether it be something for us to review, you know, being a television show or a movie, or if there's a collectible that you're interested in, be it a comic book, be it an action figure, be it trading cards, be it video games. We still haven't really featured video games on the Collector's Corner, and that would be kind of fun. So if you have any suggestions out there, any rumors, any of that kind of stuff that you want us to address, please let me know. My DMs are always wide open on Twitter. James Stone mentions, in regards to Batman Mask of the Phantasm, it was great on the big screen. James, I am very jelly because I did not get to see that film, Mask of the Phantasm, on the big screen. And unfortunately, I don't think a lot of people got to see it on the big screen. So I do envy you James, very much. Jane also says she looks forward to the show on Sunday. We appreciate that, Jane. And she also had an earlier comment where she said, "I grew up watching the classic monsters. As movies progressed, the special effects got a little too special for me." And with that, we will leave Jane with the last word.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live podcast. You can learn more about Eric Alexander and Find the Live Show on either Twitch, YouTube, or Twitter by searching for BassGod14, that's BASSGOD14, on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. If you are curious about co-host Dave Beatty, you can see some of his art, find social media links, and so much more at his website, DaveBeatty.com. That's DaveBeatty.com. If you enjoyed this episode of the Retro Rogues Live, be sure to like, share, and subscribe.